या एषा राजन् नपि काला ईशिता सत्वं सुरानीकम् इवाज्ययत्यथा तत् प्रत्यनीकान् असुरन् सुरा प्रियो रजस् तमस्कान् प्रामिनोत्यु रुश्रवा य एष राजन् अपि काल इष्ट्वा सत्वं सुरानीकम् इवाज्ययत्यथा तत्प्रत्यनीकन् असुरन् सुरप्रियो रजस्तमस्कान् प्रथमिन् य एष राजन्नपि काल इष्ठा सत्वं सुरानीकमिवाज्ययत्यथा तत्प्रत्यनीकन् असुरन् सुरप्रियो रजस्तमस्कान् प्रथमिन्नो द्युश्रुवा Yah,
which,
Esha,
this,
Rajan,
O king,
Api,
even,
Kala,
time,
Ishita,
the Supreme Lord,
Satvam,
the mode of goodness,
Suraanikam,
numbers of demigods,
Iva,
certainly,
Adhayati,
causes to increase,
Atta,
hence,
Tat,
Pratyanikan, inimical to them,
Asuran,
the demons,
Surapriya,
being the friend of the demigods,
Raja Tamaskan,
covered by passion and ignorance,
Praminoti,
destroys,
Urushrava,
whose glories are widespread. O king, this time factor enhances the sattva-guna. Thus, although the Supreme Lord is the controller, he favors the demigods, who are mostly situated in sattva-guna. Then, the demons, who are influenced by tamaguna, are annihilated. The Supreme Lord induces the time factor to act in different ways, but he is never partial. Rather, his activities are glorious. Therefore, he is called Urushrava. Purport. The Lord says in Bhagavad Gita 2.29, Samoham sarva bhuteshu name dvesho stina priya. I envy no one, nor am I partial to anyone. I am equal to all. The Supreme Personality of Godhead cannot be partial. He is always equal to everyone. Therefore, when the demigods are favored and the demons are killed, this is not his partiality, but the influence of the time factor. A good example in this regard is that an electrician connects both a heater and a cooler to the same electrical energy. The cause of the heating and cooling is the electrician's manipulation of the electrical energy, according to his desire. But factually, the electrician has nothing to do with causing heat or cold, nor with the enjoyment or suffering that results. There have been many historical incidents in which the Lord killed a demon, but the demon attained a higher position by the mercy of the Lord. Putana is an example. Putana's purpose was to kill Krishna. Aho bhaki yam stana kala kutam. She approached the house of Nandamaras with the purpose of killing Krishna by smearing poison on her breast. Yet, when she was killed, she attained the highest position, achieving the status of Krishna's mother. Krishna is so kind and impartial that because he sucked Putana's breast, he immediately accepted her as his mother. This superfluous activity of killing Putana did not diminish the Lord's impartiality. He is Suridham Sarvabhutanam, the friend of everyone. Therefore, partiality cannot apply to the character of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who always maintains his position as the Supreme Controller. The Lord killed Putana as an enemy, but because of his being the Supreme Controller, she attained an exalted position as his mother. Srila Madhva Muni therefore remarks, Kale Kala Vishaye Pishita Dehadi Karanatvat Suranikam Iva Stitam Sattvam. Ordinarily, a murderer is hanged, and in the Manu Samhita, it is said that a king bestows mercy upon a murderer by killing him, thus saving him from various kinds of suffering. Because of his sinful activities, such a murderer is killed by the mercy of the king. Krishna, the supreme judge, deals with matters in a similar way, because he is the supreme controller. The conclusion, therefore, is that the Lord is always impartial and always very kind to all living entities. So this aspect of the Lord's position or he is equal to everyone. Then this equalness then is what is being, how do you say, it's being discussed because it would appear he's not equal. Because the demigods he's favoring, the demons he's not. But factually, he's dealing with everyone according to how they deal with him. Because it's a reciprocal relationship. It's not, if one looks at it without the Lord involved, then one might think that there's a difference in how he deals. But if you look at it, that everything is all based on the relationship with the Lord, then it all makes sense. So in dealing with the Lord, then as mentioned previously, that the mode of goodness is the recommended element that the time factor is establishing. Because that's the present. That's acting in the appropriate way in the present moment. So that's what's going to get results done. Because why the present? Why not past or future? Because future you can't do anything about unless you deal in the present. And the past is gone. You can't actually change it. You can change effects of it by what you do in the present. So the present is the only aspect of time that's recommended. There, and that's controlled by goodness. Future by passion, past by ignorance. So the mode of goodness is the recommended position. That's why then the Vedic lifestyle is geared around trying to cultivate the mode of goodness, right? The standards of cleanliness, how one dresses, how one eats, how one interacts with others, the respect one has for others, one's duties, how one interacts based on those duties. All that's designed to create goodness so that the present moment that you're performing an activity actually gives you a valuable result. That's the whole point of it. Because you can act in passion and ignorance. But the problem with it is, you don't get a good result. And it's not based on what you feel like or what you want. It's based on actually what you do. That's the thing. Right? If I buy a bottle of orange juice, I can't pour out of that bottle grape juice just because I want to. I bought orange juice, but I feel more like grape juice. So therefore, it should be when I pour the bottle, grape juice goes into my glass. Right? You have orange juice will come out. It's just facts. So this is the fun part. In a contemporary society that values so much facts and science, it's probably one of the most unscientific and unfactual times in history of mankind. Because it's all by sentiment. People think just what I feel, that's what should happen. I feel like this, that's what's important. Not what I'm doing is important. Don't look at what I'm doing. You know, you have to understand how I'm feeling. Right? And I'm not going to give you any indication about that. But when you don't understand, then I'm going to get upset. And then you're at fault. So it's not going to work out very well. It's not based on what is my duties, what's my position, I'm responsible for my activities. So it doesn't work. So the mode of goodness being the appropriate position, that's because the mode of goodness then is establishing a lifestyle that is the practice of those in spiritual consciousness. Right? The activities of the spiritual world, that's what's given in Shastra. And those activities being recommended, they're to bring one to the position of goodness. Because in passion, we'll be identifying with the body, thinking of the past, what we've lost. And passion will be thinking about the body and what we can get in the future. But goodness means, yes, we're considering the body, but it's not about the body. It's about what we're supposed to do with the body. Not what I want to do with the body, what I should be doing with the body. Right? And that can elevate one, right? Because elevation is actually what the Vedic culture is about. The whole material world is about elevation. So now, what are we trying to get from this elevation? You should be trying to get bhakti, Right? That's the reason the material world's created. But even if not, at least you get karma and jnana in a beneficial way. You get elevated to the Brahma Jyoti, at least you're happy for a few moments. Or you go to the heavenly planets and a few moments less than that. Right? But when we don't follow the lifestyle of goodness, we just suffer. Why? Because we've done an activity in passion or ignorance, it will give us a result in passion and ignorance. Right? Goodness generates goodness, passion, passion, ignorance, ignorance. It's direct. It's not haphazard. So that's why it says it's done equally, because the demons always work in passion and ignorance. The demigods predominantly work in goodness, though we see now and again they don't, and we see they get the reaction for it. Right? Indra doesn't act in goodness, and he ends up living in a lotus stem for a while. Right? You know how skinny a lotus stem is, right? You know, like that. You know, if you're really worried about claustrophobia, right? Now this is a prime example, right? You know, like that. You're not going to get more. Yeah, you know, we're worried. You know, we're stuck in a room. He's stuck in a lotus stem, right? You know, like that. And then he's got a very intent, you know, how you say, old lady after him, right? Now who's going to search more than that? Right? Someone who's experienced, trained, you know, knows how to get done what they want. You have them looking for Indra. Right? So he's going to be in the lotus stem for a while. Right? So that, why? Because he acted in passion and ignorance. So it's equal. Everybody gets what they deserve. So because the demons work predominantly in passion and ignorance, the demigods work predominantly in goodness. That's why goodness is recommended, because it's elevating. Passion and ignorance is always degrading. Why? One could say, well, you know, you can connect everything to the Lord, but let us analyze. Goodness means I know what should be done. Right? Whether I do it or not is another, but I know what should be done. Passion means I don't know what's right and wrong. Goodness means I know what's right and wrong. Passion means I don't know what's right and wrong. Ignorance means I think wrong is right, right is wrong. Right? Very straightforward, very simple way of explaining. So therefore, when the devotees, well, should we do this or that? Or, you know, they just say this, but then, you know, people are doing that. That's the mode of passion. Straight up front. Pure, unalloyed. Right? You don't have to worry. And if we're saying, no, this Vedic culture, we don't care about that. You know, we're modern man, we're this, that. That's the mode of ignorance. Straight up front. So, mode of goodness means this is what Shastra says, this is what the Acharyas recommend, this is what I should be doing. Now, whether I do it or not, that's another thing, but at least I have the choice, I know what should be done. So, depending on which one you pick, Krishna reciprocates, because it's Krishna that you're interacting with. The soul is interacting with Krishna, not with the dead matter. That's the mistake. We think it's the dead matter that I'm interacting with, but it's Krishna. Why is dead matter seemingly alive? Why does dead matter transform and give results? Because of Krishna. Otherwise, dead matter just sits there, right? We go to the Grand Canyon today. It looks the same. We go to Grand Canyon a million years ago. Looks the same. We go after another million. Looks the same. You understand? That's how it works. The material energy doesn't transform. It's dead matter. But with Krishna's potency, then there's transformation. And that transformation is based on Krishna's interaction with his internal potency. If we see it that way, we get spiritual benefit. We don't see it that way, then that transforms, the internal transforms into external, and then we're bound by Maya. Very simple, very straightforward. The mechanics are very, very simple. So because the demons don't see Krishna in anything, therefore, they always get a reaction that's material. They're always bound. Even if they happen to act in goodness, they'll still be bound by that goodness. Right? But typically, they prefer passion and ignorance. And the demigods, because they see the Lord, you know, much of the time, therefore, they get that benefit, that devotional benefit. And then when they don't, they don't. So the whole idea is that the devotee is able to see Krishna in everything, then he is always able to get that benefit. He's always able to get that benefit. that even though he's within the material world, working with material energy, it still gives the effect of spiritual energy. Because the reflection is our perspective. Right? Yes, it is inferior energy, but it is Krishna's energy. Everything is Brahman, so it's Krishna's energy. It's not something else. Right? This idea is, oh, we're something different. What is that different? We're outside of God's creation? If we're outside of God's creation, that right there is atheism. Right? It's this, that's so, oh no, we're Westerners, we're different. That means that all we're saying is, we're atheists, we're different. You just have to, you know, switch the letters around. You understand? That's the whole point, is that's how the demons think. We're different. We can do things how we like. We don't have to follow all the rules. That's the demoniac mentality. Otherwise, why would these points be brought up? This book is for devotees, right? It's not for someone else. So it's discussion about fruitive work, about being entangled by material energy, by being distracted by material desires, by having atheistic viewpoints. That's there because it's for devotees. The karmas, that's other books. The Bhagavatam is for devotees. So it's talking about how we can rise above devotional service and ignorance, devotional service and passion, even devotional service and goodness, and come to the platform of devotional service and pure goodness. Right? That's what it's trying to say. So because it's Krishna and you're interacting with Krishna at every moment, if you're acting in goodness, you get a good result. You're acting in passion and ignorance. You don't know what to do, or you think what's wrong is right, you'll get a bad reaction because it's Krishna. That's all. So this verse is just pointing this out. This verse is not about the extra point that because it's devotees and that devotion, therefore Krishna responds in that devotional mood. This verse is not bringing that up. It's just bringing up the point that the mechanics that how you deal with Krishna is how he reciprocates. It's equal. Right? However you deal, the demons we see before under Sukracharya, because one day they're wondering, why is it the demigods are always on top and we're not? And then he said, because they're doing sacrifice. They're studying scriptures. They're performing austerity. That's why they're on top. So then the demons question, well, can we do that and we be on top? So then Sukracharya, yes. So then, okay, then teach us how to do this. So then he taught them. They started doing sacrifices, austerity, studying the scriptures, and they started to become so powerful that they were overwhelming the demigods, because the demigods, you know, get distracted by sense gratification. And so they became more powerful. And they were able to take over. So then the demigods then, you know, naturally they go to Brahma. Brahma then goes to Kiradaksha Vishnu. And then, you know, meditating on the Lord reveals within the heart. But this time he didn't reveal in the heart, he actually came personally. Before all the demigods. Personally. Because this was an important position. So now he says, okay, I understand your problem and you want this problem solved. But since the solving of this problem is going to create more problems than what you think there are, is there anybody who would like to come back to me before this solution? Right? So all the demigods kind of look at each other, get uncomfortable. Well, you know, I think I left the gas on, or well, you know, I got to take my daughter to the dentist, and you know, all kinds of stuff. So they had plenty of reasons why they didn't want to go back to Godhead that moment. So then Vishnu, okay, cool. So then from outside, from his back, from two sides came the Adi Jinnah and Adi Buddha. Right? Jinnah is the Jain, and Buddha we know. So the two forms of atheism. So then they went down to the demons, and the Adi Buddha, then he went to the ones doing the yajna, you know, and started preaching, you know, the peace, non-violence and everything like that. So they gave up the yajna and all that. And then Adi Jinnah went to the ones doing austerity and studying the shastras, because they say, why are you doing this? Oh, because we'll get this benefit. And Jainism is shyadvad, which means maybe it is, maybe it isn't. So yeah, maybe you'll get, but maybe you won't. You know, you're putting in all this endeavor, and then you put all that, and then you don't get. And so like this way, it bewildered them, and they stopped the austerity and the study of scriptures. And in this way, then, you know, the demigods dropped in their potency, and the demigods were left at whatever potency they had, so it was a little bit more. Right? But then atheism was how you say, introduced. So that's the point, is if you follow, it doesn't matter your position, you get the benefit. Prahlad Maharaj is the demon, but he follows devotional service. He gets the topmost benefit. Right? Vritrasura is a demon. He follows devotion, he gets the topmost benefit. And we see the demigods, they don't follow, then they get into trouble. So the actual position is who follows Krishna's directions and who doesn't. That's the real thing. That's the actual thing. Does this make sense? That's the actual point. So if you follow, you get the benefit. You don't follow, you don't get the benefit. It doesn't matter who you are. So in that way, Krishna is equal with everybody. The mechanical position of doing something according to the mode of goodness means what's recommended by Guru and Sadhu and Shastra. You follow that, you will get the benefit, no matter what your position. And no matter what your position, if you don't follow it, you'll get into trouble. Right? It's not that, oh, we're devotees, we don't have to follow. The demigods are devotees. They're neophyte devotees. Like that. And so, therefore, they get bewildered. Right? Because we see that those demigods that are Madhyamas or Uttamas, they don't get bewildered. They don't get distracted. So they don't have problems. Right? Does this make sense? Yeah. So therefore, the point is Krishna is equal to everyone because everybody's following his path. It's just a matter of which way you're going, right? And which way you're facing. Like that. Does that make sense? Okay. Any questions or comments? Or something? Yes. Okay.
You mentioned that some of the demigods are Vajivas and some of the demigods are Kutamas. Can you give some examples of those and the situations that they demonstrate?
Yes. Why not? That wasn't actually the point. That was the example. See, it's when you're discussing something, there's a principal point, and then you have to give example. But because we're generally trained to look at the secondary, we always catch that, right? You see, like Narad Muni, Parvata Muni, Lord Brahma, you know, these are Uttamas, Madhyamas. And so we see is that they function in a more stable environment. You know, they don't make as, you don't hear of like Narad making any such mistakes, right? Unless it's by Krishna's plan. And then he ends up as the, you know, the Gandharva and all that. But Brahma, we see in the beginning, he's a Madhyama, so sometimes mistakes are made, but as he goes, then he comes to that Uttama platform, and then we don't see any mistakes. Like as Haridas Thakur, we don't see any mistakes. Does that make sense? You know? So these great sages, the Kumaras and other things like that, then they're great sages that are on this platform. They're not on the neophyte platform. But it's not necessarily they've come to that Uttama platform. So your residents of like Tapaloka, the yogis and different things like that. Or even someone like Durvasa, he's on that lower platform. Then after association with Ambarish Maharaj, then he comes to that platform of appreciating the Vaishnavas. And does this make sense? Yeah. Does that work? Okay. Yes.
You're saying that the Sattva Vinayaka uplifts you.
Yes.
At the same time, you mentioned that the demigods, they, because they are on different levels, they sometimes get bewildered.
Right.
So, what upliftments they, what is the current person, does the upliftment differ, they change?
No, it's a matter of when we say upliftment means when you're situated in Dharma, right? You're following the rules given by the scriptures. What's to be done, what's not to be done. What is your identity? What is the situation? How do you fit into it? What results can be gained? And you're doing all this according to scripture. Then you can elevate yourself from that position. See, from pranamoy, you can't really elevate yourself because pranamoy's position is it's aimed at sense gratification, right? Anamoya is sense gratification. Now, if everybody's going around doing their own thing, it's a problem, right? You go out, you know, whack the girl over the head, drag her home by the hair. But, you know, after a while, she gets a bit too many lumps on her head. You know, maybe she gets, you know, Parkinson's or something from being hit on the head too many times. Right? You know, so it's not a good system. right? So people get together and decide if we work cooperatively, then we can get more development in the arts and the sciences and the economics and everything like that. You understand? And then to make that work, there must be morality so that we do keep working together, and there must be justice in case we don't. So pranamoy simply means that. It's economically based for sense gratification, but the justice and the morality are there to kind of make it work a bit. But the whole point is it's about what do I want, what do we want as a group. It's not about what Shastras recommend. It has nothing to do with it. Right? So when you get to Dharma, that's the third platform, the Manamoy or Gyanamoy. That platform, then you're actually accepting that what Shastra says, that's what I should do. At that point, you become human. Pranamoy always means subhuman. Manamoy means human. Now, as a human, you can elevate yourself to the heavenly planets, to Brahman, or back to Godhead. That are the options. Right? Does that make sense? So you have Dharma, that gives you Artha. Most people then use it for Kama. So it goes that direction. You understand? But Dharma can be used to free yourself from the material world to go back to Godhead. You can use it in the other direction. So devotees use it that direction, materialists use it going down. So you can use Dharma just for sense gratification, but you'll elevate to the heavenly planets for yourself sense gratification. But it's still about sense gratification. So even though you're using the platform of Dharma, your consciousness is actually lower than that. So you're using the medium of Dharma, but your consciousness is sense gratification. Or you could be using the medium of Dharma and you want liberation, right? Because you're tired of sense gratification. But for the devotee, he's using Dharma to please Krishna, so for bhakti. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the meaning. You can elevate yourself any direction. Right? But that's the position in which you are actually efficient. Lower than that's really hit and miss, because if passion and ignorance are so great, modern culture would be fabulous. You know, everything would be stable, steady, people would be comfortable, wealthy, you know, good relationships, good community. You know, but if you read the newspaper, that's not what you find. Right? So, does that make sense? Yes. Yes. Not that he knows, he thinks.
He's pretty convinced, right? If someone is clearly in the mode of ignorance.
If he's not convinced, that's mode of passion.
Right. So if he's convinced that wrong is right and right is wrong, then where is his fault when he's doing the wrong thing? Because he thinks it's right.
Because it's God sets the standard, not us. It's not about how we feel. It's what's reality. Just like for the kid, the small baby, they have a toy. They think if they throw it, it will be fun. Right? What happens when they throw it? It breaks. And then they're going, oh, broken. They're surprised. So that's how it works.
So then the mode of ignorance is like a learning position? They learn?
They can learn, but generally the tendency is they don't always learn. Because the problem is then you think it's somebody else is at fault. Right? Just like the statistic that I think it's something really high, like either 92 or 98% of those in prison think that they're not wrong. It was just situational that why they're in prison. They don't actually think I did something wrong. You know, so that's the problem with ignorance, is even though you're getting the reactions that should correct you, generally because you don't want to learn, you don't. That's the difficulty. But Krishna's reciprocating with the living entity because that's what they want. They want to be in ignorance, so therefore the opportunity is there. Right? Passion is you don't know because there's options. Because if I follow the rules, I know that's good and that's proper and I'll get benefit there. But if I don't follow the rules, I'll get some other benefits, immediate sense gratification and facility and all that. So because of passion, I want to leave the options open. Right? Goodness means, no, this is the way to do it, this is the way I'll do it. That's why that's considered austerity. To perform your duty, that's austerity. Well, passion and ignorance, there's no austerity there. I mean, other than the austerity that just comes from the difficulty of doing the activity. Like Prabhupada gives the example of girls going out in short skirts in winter, right? You know, so they it's a problem, right? I saw one picture of a girl in New York in the winter. There's snow falling. She's out in a pair of jeans and this ridiculously little short dinky top. But she does have, and you know, she does have on long gloves, you know, that come up to her elbows, you know. So that was the, you know, warming element there. So that's mode of ignorance. It's austerity in the mode of ignorance because she's trying to show off, attract people to herself. Does that make sense? So it's not that it's not austere, but it's not the austerity that you're going to get much benefit from. Right? You might get the austerity is okay, then you'll be able to tolerate cold and be in a cold environment and be able to attract others, just like the female polar bear can attract male polar bears, but they're not disturbed by the cold, right? You know, so that benefit of austerity you can gain, yes. Okay. Is that okay? Okay, yes. Yes, yes. So Kapila Muni describes this in the third canto. So devotional services mixed with ignorance generally means that one is identifying with one's bodily position. So one thinks because I am materially qualified, that's my advancement in devotional service. It would be, let's say, general street person joins and someone who's a doctor joins at the same time. Mode of ignorance will mean the doctor guy will think that I'm more advanced than the other guy because I'm a doctor and he's just an ordinary guy. Like that. So much of the time we see someone's got money or someone has a professional background, so automatically they're the leaders of the Krishna consciousness movement. But that's mode of ignorance because it's about the devotion, not about material skill. Now, if you want to know something about, okay, this devotee's sick, what to do, now you go to the doctor. You don't say, well, everybody's got an opinion because they all go on the internet and they can all, you know, look it up. Then you go to them because that's the skill. But when it comes to the devotion, it's another thing. Also an attribute of those in ignorance, if it gets really, you know, because you have also within that goodness, passion, ignorance, within ignorance. So the general thing is that someone, even if they're in devotional service and ignorance, they have faith in Krishna, faith in the deity. But the difficulty is they don't see the devotees. They're not important. Even to the point where, and if it's ignorance of ignorance, they're actually destructive towards devotees. So the envious of devotees try to destroy others' devotees' lives and things like that. You know, someone does something towards you, and then they're going to get you back and make sure that you understand not to bother them. That's the mode of ignorance. Like that. Mode of passion means you're worshiping the deity, you're doing everything right. You're following all the rules, but you want material benefit for that. You're worshiping the deity, I should get this. You know, I collected $500,000 for the temple, where's my facilities? That's the mode of passion. Like that. You know, I've been around for so long, I have nothing, why is that? You know, I've been here, that person, he's new, and he became the president, why not me? I've been around long. This is mode of passion. Right? And mode of goodness means this is what I'm supposed to do, I do it. You know, it's the rules, I do it, and everything like that. The weakness of devotional service and goodness is you can get conditioned by goodness, you don't want to take up anything that'll be a trouble. Right? While passion and ignorance, you're willing to take up trouble. You know, because of the benefit you'll get. Goodness is you don't want to take it up because you don't want to go through the trouble. You don't want the benefit either. But pure goodness is then you'll do anything for Krishna. So you're willing to take the, you know, like the trouble of preaching or cultivating devotees or, you know, whatever it is, some project trying to develop it. But for Krishna, the trouble that it takes, that will then be pure goodness. You know, just like that example of the sannyasi saying, oh, it's so much difficulty dealing with all this money and all that. And, you know, I have to go to the bank and all these, you know, mundane things. And that's so that's mode of goodness. Right? They're doing their duties, but it's a trouble for them. It's a problem. Prabhupada said, I'm also going to the bank. Says, but the point is, this is for Krishna, right? So that's why then we do it. So that's pure goodness. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes.
Doing
if you're doing something in pure goodness and it's giving trouble.
Do you consider,
I mean, do you consider your nature when you consider trouble that comes up dealing with the material world?
Yeah, is there
no, but to deal in pure goodness means you're going to have to use the medium of the world to express the pure goodness, no? No, I mean, you're going to work somewhere else, right? Like, we're all walking down this the road here, and it's made out of asphalt, but the one you're walking down is made out of Chintamani, or... I'm just saying, what's going on here? Not, I mean, if it is, great, because that's actually what it is. It means that it's because of our polluted consciousness, we think it's asphalt, and, you know, and if your consciousness, then you understand it's Chintamani, like that, so...
Then you do any service that's
you do any service that matches your nature.
Okay.
See, the thing is there's this mistake that for management's facility and ease, a manager tries to get anybody to do anything. But that's a weakness on the manager's part, because Prabhupada very clearly from the very beginning in letters and that. The manager has to be able to understand someone's nature according to Varnashram and engage them that way. And if they don't, then technically they're not a very developed manager. This is a very, very important point. Prabhupada makes this point. This is a primary point, not just another point he makes. Some people will say, oh, well, 60% of what Prabhupada says, yeah, is about this transcendental kind of leadership where he's seeing, he's giving example, he's taking the standards, you know, setting that example and not getting involved. But 40% he talks about seeing the accounts and other kind of nitty-gritty like that. The weakness in that is making those two equal means there's no intelligence. There's no power discrimination. Because the 60% is the primary. That's what you always do. The 40% is if you need to use that to establish that main point. So it's not about seeing accounts. It's about establishing standards. You understand? This is what we're talking about. And if one doesn't see this, one is actually not very developed in leadership. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So that's the problem. There's this idea is that it's so easy to just say, oh, we're not this body. We can do anything. But the point is yes, we, the soul, are not this body. But there's one very major glitch in this perspective. The body is the body. The mind is the mind. The intelligence is that. And that's all there is. So if one has an inherent nature to do something, you can engage them in that, and that works very well. And if they don't have the nature, engage them in that, you can't expect to get anything good. So therefore, it's just lack of knowledge, lack of seeing the importance, and lack of endeavor on the part of leadership that they will say these things. Because that's what they're supposed to do. We're supposed to engage our nature. Krishna throughout the Gita says, engage your nature, perform your duties, which means what Shastra says, according to your conditioning, with knowledge, without attachment, right? For Krishna. He says this many, many, many times in the Gita. So that's the whole point. So then one should know what it is. It's not rocket science. One just has to be interested to learn it. And then one can learn it with and to advantage. Now there's such a thing as emergency. Where in an emergency, then anybody does anything, but it's only for a short time. But then the problem again comes, because someone can do it for a short time, then the manager thinks, oh great, this is makes it easy, and it just continues, and then they bloop. And sorry for the term bloop. Prabhupada used it. And if you don't like it, the door's over there. You understand? So that's the thing. People leave because managers can't understand what someone's nature is. It's just easy for them to try to take a square peg and stick it into a round hole. And if it doesn't work, it's because of your lack of surrender. But actually, it's due to their lack of surrender. understand? It's a fundamental principle. Prabhupada engaged everybody. What did Jadarani do? She could do a little painting. She made a painter. She was singing. She was cooking. She would engage everybody according to their nature. That's why they did so great. That's the position. That's what we're supposed to do.
Thank you.
Does that make sense? Okay. Okay, last point.
Maharaj, you spoke about acting in mode of goodness and also about seeing Krishna in everything that we are doing. And my question is that when we are doing indirect devotional service, for example, working, it's clear that we should act in a mode of goodness according to Shastra. But should we try to see Krishna in it and how to do it?
Whose economics? Little pieces of paper with faces on it? That's actually a value? How does it work? So economics works by Krishna's laws. People who know the laws make money, just like in the stock market. Those who are technical traders make money. Those who are not just look in the magazine, oh, this is a good stock, they're the ones that the people who know how to know the technique make the money off of. You understand? So knowledge is how things work. That's the mode of goodness. So, but the point is that's not enough. So this idea is, oh yes, if you're in the mode of goodness, then everything's perfect, or the varnashram, then everything's perfect. That's not the point. We're only pushing these because these are ideal secondary positions. The primary position is devotional service. If you don't have devotional service, then all the varnashram, all these other things are useless. It means it'll be a better useless than a non-Vedic useless, but still it's useless. That's the point. So when we talk about varnashram, when we talk about all these things, it's only because we're simply trying to point out what's better to use. Just like, let's say you go into the kitchen or you're going to the market and you're going to pick potatoes for cooking for Krishna. Which potatoes you'll pick?
Nice, good potato.
Yes. But now what if we say, oh, we're not this body, you know, so we're not this potato, so it doesn't matter. So then what do we get? We get third-class potatoes for Krishna. You have to be able to tell what does what. You know what I'm saying? So all we're trying to do is point out what is the good quality potato. That's all. We're not saying that the potato is devotional service. Right? Because if it was, then Mr. and Mrs. Potato Head would be way ahead. They'd be like Uttamadikaris by now, right? You know? Like that. Yeah, see? All this time, we never knew. Does that make sense? Yeah, so that's the idea. Okay, so we'll end here. Sorry. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jainadai Gaura Premanandi.